Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Going on hour number two here on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey. Had a very busy first hour discussing the latest on the Cubs' pursuit of Ryan Pressly and others, including Alex Bregman, as they continue to check in on him. Bob Nightingale did report yesterday that the Astros were leaving the door open for Bregman. So there's a lot going on with Alex Bregman. We talked about how the Cubs are prioritizing bullpen. We are waiting to be joined by Cubs prospect Cade Horton. Obviously, a lot of people were excited about the possibility of him making his major league debut in 2024 for the Cubs, but a shoulder injury set him back as well. I want to get to something we were talking about before the break, Bruce, because somebody from the 847 thinks this guy didn't get in unanimously isn't a strong argument for the Hall of Fame. There's no argument to be made to not vote for Ichiro. I don't think you and I agree with that. Someone felt slighted, or someone either was they thought there were 10 other players, or maybe they voted for no one. That's the other thing, that you have the right to submit a blank ballot, Bruce, right?
You do have a right. You know, next year, like I said, it's not a strong group of players that are going to be added to the list. Carlos Beltran got more support this year. He got up to 70%. Andrew Jones got 66%. They're the only ones really trending over 50% of the vote. It might be a very small class next year. I didn't vote for Beltran. I don't know if I'll change my philosophy, but you know, we'll have to see how it shakes out. Again, people have a right to vote for or not vote for anyone they want. Still a free country, last I looked, but you know, there are some challenges out there, though.
Yeah, there's a reason that there's only one unanimous player of all time. You can get mad about Ichiro, but then you have to go back and make a case for Babe Ruth. Let's go to the phone lines. The Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Cade Horton is on the line with us. Download the Circa app today. Cubs prospect Cade Horton, Bruce.
And Cade Horton, top prospect for the Chicago Cubs, nice enough to take some time out on a Saturday morning to join you and me, Ryan, on Inside the Clubhouse. Cade, how are you? And are you still in Arizona getting yourself ready?
I'm doing well, yes, sir. I'm at the complex, about ready to get ready for stretch, and I'm doing good out here.
What has the rehabilitation been like for you since last May? You know, being shut down and dealing with the shoulder situation. What has that been like, and where are you at right now?
Yeah, it's been a long process. I think it's been a lot longer than we initially thought from last year. But it's been good. I've been at home rehabbing, and I think I'm in a really good spot right now. I'm feeling healthy. I've started throwing bullpens out here, and so I'm ready to go for the spring and feeling healthy.
Cade, how frustrating, you know, have the last couple of years for you? Because the idea of you making your major league debut last year at Wrigley Field was real. You know, like that was kind of the plan, I think, maybe for everybody, including the front office. Certainly for you, that was your goal. It's always to get to the big leagues. What was the frustration like for you? I mean, you're a guy who's gone through Tommy John. Then you have the shoulder, and are you sitting there going, what's going on here? I mean, here we go again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it was disappointing. But, you know, I think there's a lot of good things that also come out of facing adversity. I think I've grown a lot and figured out a lot about myself over this past year. that I probably wouldn't have had I not faced, you know, adversity. And so it's just all about, I feel like sometimes rehabbing can be more mental than physical. And so I feel like my mental, the mental side of the game, I've became a lot better at, and learned so many things about myself. So it's been good, but at the same time, it is disappointing. But when you can't perform on the field, you have to find ways to still get better. And so I think that's one of the good things that I focused on during this rehab process was, you know, just my mental game.
The technical part of your delivery, I mean, that's something I've always looked at with pitchers, where they came from, you know, college ball or, you know, a high school and then developing through, and then where their delivery is right now. How essential is that to you moving forward? How different is your delivery, your landing spot, just the whole mechanical part of that? And how do you think about and use a different mechanical approach without losing the natural ability to just throw like you have and be the pitcher that you are?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a couple points in my mechanics that I really like to hit. And one, the most important is my hands breaking on time. I feel like when my hands are late, everything gets away from me. And then when my hands are too early, I yank everything. And so it's all about my hands breaking on time and really just being an athlete. I think, you know, a lot of times pitchers can become robotic. And I think being just an athlete up there and moving freely helps me, you know, command the ball better and just allows my stuff to move better, just being more free up there. And so, yeah, I focus a lot on my mechanics, and I like trying to keep it simple. So I think the biggest key is just my hands being on time and getting into my being able to get on my backside.
I want to go back to that mental side of the game you were talking about. You did an interview earlier, I think this year, and you talked about a golf ball, and you said it started off by being smooth, then somebody had the great idea to put dents in it, and that made the ball go further, and I think that reflects a lot on me. I mean, that sounds like somebody who's been in the big league 7 or 8 years and that is you know, hitting their 30s, and it has like a resume that says, yeah, you know, I had a rough year here or there. But to have this at 23, like, where does that come from? Have you always been a cerebral guy? And do you feel, with these injuries behind you now, more prepared than ever to get to the big leagues?
Oh, absolutely. And I know it sounds crazy saying that, you know, me being, you know, kind of grateful for getting hurt, but I really do think there is a lot of truth in that. Like, I think I look at my situation and like you said, I've grown so much in the mental side of the game, and that's what the game is. It's 90% mental, especially at a high level. And so, yeah, just learning those things. And, you know, I read a book. It's called It Takes What It Takes. And just that book talks about, you know, you have to put in the work. It truly takes what it takes. And the mental side is something that a lot of people forget about. But I think I did my homework, and I do feel more prepared than I did last year. And yeah, the golf ball, I read that in Chop Wood, Carry Water, and it talks about, you know, the golf ball being smooth. And then they had the great idea to put dents in it, and they figured out the ball flies further. And it's just like me, you know, I have these bumps in the road, but ultimately, if those bumps weren't there, then it can't take me to where I want to go.
Chicago Cubs number one pitching prospect, Cade Horton, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse for a few more minutes. Cade, so mentally, how do you stay away from, I've only thrown 122 innings, I didn't throw enough last year, how do I fit? Where do I start? Where do I go? How do you keep those thoughts away, knowing that you know, they always want to build innings for guys these days before they just let them go. Can you talk them out of that philosophy?
You know, I think when it comes down to it, my job is to go out there and get outs no matter, you know, it's a matter of when my number's called, and I got to go out there and make the best of my opportunity. And I think that's just something I can't control, so I tend not to worry about it. I like controlling the things I can control, and that's being able to go out there, slow the game down, and get strike one. And so that's kind of my philosophy on it. And yeah,
I will tell you this as encouragement: Garrett Crochet had thrown 79 innings in his entire career, spanning about almost 4.5 years for the White Sox before he went out and became one of the more dominant pitchers last year. So put that in the back of your mind that, you know, be free and think, I'm going out there and I'm going to throw 150 innings this year.
That's right. That's right. And you have to think like that, because if you don't, then you're going to end up in a situation where, like, oh, well, I wasn't expecting to go this many innings, you know, and then you find yourself unprepared.
You guys have 7 of the top 97 prospects in the game with the latest MLB pipeline update, with you being 52. How much do you guys as a group, especially a young group, knowing that you have all of this talent that's on the cusp of making their big league debut and adding to what the Cubs already have, how exciting is that? Yet at the same time, the Cubs are also trying to get into the mix where they're competing for World Series titles. So they kind of have the best of both worlds where they're trying to thread the needle, be one of the top payrolls in the game, and have top prospects. Your name's been attached to many trade possibilities for over 12 months, but the Cubs keep saying, Cade Horton's our guy, Cade Horton's our guy. So put that all in a blender. What's that like for you guys as a young group, knowing that you're knocking on the door of adding to what's already here in Chicago?
Yeah, it's really cool and exciting to watch and be a part of it. I think we have a great group of guys, hard workers that want to win and help contribute in whatever way we can. You know, we've seen it in the minor leagues, in Double A, where that group was kind of together and we ended up winning the Southern League Championship. And I think that's just a testament to, you know, winners win no matter what level it is. If you give us a shot, we will go out there and play our best.
Give us a thumbnail sketch of some of the players that you played with at AAA last year and what you think their upside is. I know you're not a scout and you're not a baseball executive, but you're a baseball player. You know the best. When we hear about Matt Shaw, give us an idea of what his game is like.
Yeah, Matt he's an unreal player. And he's an even better person, which I really enjoy playing with him. If I had to give him a comp, I would say Dustin Pedroia. He goes out there, he's going to play defense well, but he's going to hit even better, and he's going to play his ass off no matter the situation. And I think that's just a testament to Matt and the work he puts in.
What about you? What about an athlete in another sport that you watch, and maybe you can't emulate what an NBA player or an NFL player does, but the way that they go about their process or their game that you're like, you know what, that dude's someone I want to latch on to because I love the way he plays, he prepares, etc. Is there a guy out there in another sport that you're like, yeah, that's my dude?
Yeah, I think I love just watching and admiring. He doesn't play anymore, but Tom Brady.
That's a pretty good one.
Just the way he handles his business. You know, he's not going to go out there and run the fastest or make the best juke moves, but he is prepared. And I think, you know, that's where he focuses on the mental game. You know, if it's the fourth quarter with 2 minutes left, who do you want to have the ball? Tom Brady. And that's just, that's how he operates. And I feel like I like taking his mental side of sports and applying it to myself.
If you have to name one most impactful Cub instructor, or doesn't even have to be Cub, it could be college, could be high school, that's had the most impact on you and your thought process as a pitcher, who would that be? Just give me the first one that comes to your mind, and we'll apologize to everybody else later.
I would say Skip Johnson. He was my head coach and pitching coach in college, and he's really taught me so much about the game and just not letting the moment get too big. What he does for me is simplify everything, and it allows me to focus on one task at hand. And I think that he's really instilled that into me, and it's something I believe in. And I think, he's definitely been the biggest impact on my career.
Last one for you, and we appreciate you being here and joining us on the show this morning. We know you got to get back out to those side fields in Mesa. How geek jacked up are you? I mean, are you full go, ready to go come spring training here in a few weeks? And does it feel like March yet for you? I mean, are you just, because you haven't pitched in so long, how do you slow that down to make sure, and this is part of that mental preparation you're talking about, how do you slow that down to not get too ahead of yourself because you haven't pitched in so long?
Yeah, I think, that is one of the hardest things coming back from an injury is getting out there and actually doing and playing again and getting those game reps. And so how I do that is I take my bullpens very serious. I treat it like a game and try to be as competitive as possible. And that allows me to be prepared and have the confidence to go out there when it's game time and get ready to go. And so, yeah, I'm excited for this season. It's going to be fun. It's going to be, I got that itch and I'm ready to go.
Cade, we appreciate you joining us. Health and success in 2025 for you. It's certainly, you've put the work in, you've had some setbacks, and I know Cubs fans and Bruce and I are excited for what's next for you. And we hope to see you in Chicago later this year.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you all for having me on.
Cade Horton, the Cubs' top pitching prospect, joining us here on Inside the Clubhouse. When we come back, Bruce, I'm looking for... I make an argument that Jonathan Cannon was the best pitcher on the White Sox last year. I'd make that argument.
Oh, you're really going out on a limb there.
So Bruce likes my pick, I guess, is what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Jonathan Cannon, and he did not get the... He didn't have all of the prospect rankings and everything behind him when he came up. He was just a guy trying to fill a spot and just happened to do it.
I'll put the word hope up.
Oh, boy.
The great hope, because he looked like somebody you could count on to get better and continue to be. We'll talk to him about whether he's the opening day pitcher for the White Sox next.
Now, I know everyone's out there going, McGuffey, are you out of your mind? It was Garrett Crochet. Yes. Okay, it was Garrett Crochet. But I'm putting Garrett Crochet
aside.
We
were always looking past Crochet last year.
Yep, we'll continue to look. Now, he's a Red Sox. Let's talk about the present, not the past. Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey, Inside the Clubhouse. We'll be joined by Jonathan Cannon on the other side.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Ryan McGuffey and Bruce Levine, as we hit the back end of our bullpen, 7th, 8th, and 9th inning here, taking you into Saturday suckage with Steve Rosenblum. Thanks to all the local businesses that entered our Score Big for Your Business contest this month, we want to say congrats to Heritage Restaurant and Caviar Bar in Humboldt Park. I heard them yesterday with Bernstein for being this year's winner of the contest. The restaurant will get their commercials produced by The Score. They'll be heard during Super Bowl 59 right here on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app as we wait for Jonathan Cannon to join us. Sox Fest is in town. There's a lot going on. These guys are all over the place. They're going to be doing a kids camp later this afternoon. Hopefully some of you fans out there are taking your kids to it because it looks really cool. And then Sox Fest live tonight from 5 to 9 at the Remova Theater once again.
Your anticipation for baseball season starting, spring training starting 2 weeks from tomorrow with the Cubs, 4 days later with the White Sox in Glendale, Cubs in Mesa, with the bull season looking like it's going the other direction,
yep.
The Hawks already gone that direction. The Bears' excitement about the new coach, but the reality of a 5-12 season. How much you anticipate fans feeling good about the baseball season starting?
Well, there's two things. It's the feeling that's, you know, hope springs eternal, and that the weather's going to eventually turn. Although February is usually the darkest days here.
It's balmy tomorrow.
It was balmy today walking in here.
Yeah,
that's how it's been. I mean, it's tomorrow. Yeah, nice in the 30s. But I think there's a major portion of this city, Bruce, that has their hands up, that's fed up, that's like, why us? Why don't we have something to latch onto? The White Sox, as we've been talking about, the wins and losses, the wins aren't going to be there at the end of the day, not in 2025. That's the Cubs have the opportunity to take the baton from no one. They can literally pick it up off the ground because it's been dropped by every other team. They can pick this thing up and sprint to the top of the mountain by themselves. That's what I'm anticipating. That's what I'm hoping for, is that the Cubs can get a nice play really well in April and build a 2 or 3 game lead in the NL Central and be in the conversation to have a 4 or 5 game lead at the trade deadline, not chasing 3 or 4 games of the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that it's the biggest market team that can spend the most in their division hasn't quite worked out the last few years.
And it's been frustrating.
I mean, you're 10 games behind Milwaukee last year, right? Yeah. Cincinnati's biggest acquisition in the offseason was Terry Francona coming back to manage the Reds. It's huge because it changes the philosophy. Just like Craig Counsell tried to change the philosophy last year in August when he said, hey, we have to be a 90-win team around here. We're not good enough, you know, at 83 wins. He basically said, I didn't come here to be a mediocre team, you know, for the Cubs to be a mediocre team. And setting the bar higher when you hire a guy like him or a guy like Francona is something you pay attention to. It's the same thing with Johnson and the Bears. You know, you are setting the bar higher by hiring a world-class coordinator to be your head coach, and you want him to push you onto greater things, both in the front office as well as on the field.
All right, let's throw a curveball here and go to our guest on the line who's in town for Sox Fest. He's brought to you by the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Jonathan Cannon on the line last year. We're going to talk about his outstanding 2024 season. Jonathan, in town for Sox Fest. What was your impressions last night at the Sox Fest Live at the Remova Theater? It was the first time the White Sox have brought Sox Fest back in 5 years. Thanks for joining us. Good to see you last night.
Yeah, good to see y'all too. It was that was exciting. That was a lot of fun. I really had no idea what to expect kind of going into it. And, you know, just to kind of walk out and see the fan support was unbelievable. I mean, I might be biased, but I think we have the best fans. And so to see them super excited and pumped up for this season means a lot to me and all of us for all their support. And, you know, we had a lot of fun last night. So looking forward to doing it again tonight.
What did you learn about being a major league pitcher and player that you had no idea about before you came into that locker room last year? Is there anything when I say these words that comes to your mind immediately?
I think I didn't really know about the travel and like the routines that kind of go with it, and just kind of like what goes into taking care of your body to make sure you can pitch every fifth day, with all the flights and different cities and time zones and sleep. And it can be challenging, and it's definitely a learning curve. But, I mean, that's one of the things that I really relied on some of the older guys to kind of help me get through and figure out what works for them.
Last year when you came up, you know, a lot of guys come up and it's like, there's just like, oh, he's the number one prospect in the organization. He's a fifth ranked prospect here or there. You came up and just kind of took the baseball. April 17th, you come up, make your first start. But that fourth and fifth start are the ones, that's when I was like, my eyes were wide open, because you go, you're at Seattle, you know, you're learning how to, you just talked about the travel spots. You go out west, now you're playing at Seattle. You go seven innings, one earned, seven strikeouts. Following start, you get the Houston Astros here at home. You almost go complete game shutout. You go 8 2/3, four strikeouts, seven hits. Was that your, were those two starts your aha moment, or did you you're just going out, putting the work in, taking the ball every fifth day? Because I thought from that moment in mid-June that you were a guy that the White Sox could count on. You proved that the rest of the way, but those were, to me, just watching, covering the White Sox and watching from afar, going, man, like, I like this guy's moxie on the mound. Those are two legit opponents, and you just went out and shoved.
Yeah, I mean, those two outings, I think bigger than obviously just the line and doing well, like, I think it kind of gave me the confidence boost that I needed, especially after getting sent down the first time. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's always the, like, a very difficult transition. Like, you come up to the big leagues, like, you're here, you're doing it, and then you get sent back down, and now you're back pitching in the minors, so you get called back up. You want to be able to prove yourself a little bit. Like, hey, like, I belong. And not just prove it to other people, but really just prove it to yourself. And I think those two outings were a big stepping stone for me, and just kind of helped catapult me through the rest of the season.
I guess when your career ends, you can talk about the 2024 season and how you learned about being what a great teammate is. What was that experience like for you and the other guys that joined you in that clubhouse? And how did you guys stay together? And, you know, us in the media are kind of, you know, watching for reactions in a negative way, like we saw in 2022 and 2023. It never happened last mm-hmm. year. Mm-hmm. How did that happen? And what did you learn from that?
I mean, I think it speaks to just the type of people that we have on the team and had on the team this past year. I mean, there were no, like, no bad apples, no anything. I mean, everyone was bought into what we were doing. We were going out there every day and trying to win. But more than that, like, even in August, September, when, I mean, we'd been eliminated from the playoffs for, like, a month and a half, 2 months, like, everyone's still coming in, doing what they need to do, putting the work in. The older guys setting a really good example for some of us young guys about what it means to be a professional, go in, do the work, all of that sort of stuff. And that lesson for me, I know, will stick with me for the rest of my career.
I was talking to some of the prospect guys last night, you know, Colson and Braden and Kyle Teal and Hagen Smith, and we know what Chris has been able to do in the offseason by trading Garrett and kind of flipping the White Sox prospects and the system. I think they have six of the top 66 in the new rankings. I asked them about coming up together and kind of, we know the narrative out there, Jonathan, right? Like, there were more cameras there late in September for the wrong reasons. It really didn't have anything to do with one particular person. It's just the team was chasing this historical record that no one really wanted to talk about, and I get it. But now that you're part of this young core going forward, and you were part of that the dark cloud narrative that was being spun both locally and nationally, how motivating is it for you knowing the type of talent from position players to pitching that's coming in 25 and 26 and 27? How motivating is that for you as an individual and as a group of guys to say, hey, let's be the group to put a stop to this?
Yeah, I mean, it's very impressive to see just the amount of talent that we have in our system, and I think on our big league team right now as well. I mean, we got to be the youngest team in baseball. If we're not the youngest, we're definitely top three. And just the amount of young guys on the team that you see kind of buying into what everyone's trying to do here, I think that's special. And to see the Hagans, the Schultz, the Colson, all the guys that these fans are gonna see in big league camp here in a couple weeks, it's really exciting. Like, you just see those guys, and they're just ultra, ultra talented players. So I'm really, really looking forward to seeing them get going this spring, playing some of those games with us and share a field with them.
Leadership. What, looking at that young group of players in that room yesterday when Ryan and I were there, part of the media interviewing you guys, you know, I looked around and my eyes kept focusing on you, and a lot of the other players were coming toward you. How do you handle being a young leader with very little major league experience and accepting that role? Has that been a part of your DNA from the time you were a little league on? I mean, do you embrace being a leader on a team?
I think it's always something that I've embraced in teams that I've been on in the past. And I think it really kind of just speaks to how I was raised, and all the people around me are very good leaders. And a lot of those qualities, I think, have kind of rubbed off on me, I like to think, anyway. And so, like, being a young leader, like, I know how important it was for me to come up in big league camp for the first time and meet guys that were on the big league team, to see what they do and how they do it, and to kind of be taken under their wing and just learning what it means to be a professional. And so if I can help in any way with some of the younger guys that are those first timers this year, I hope that I can be that guy for someone.
You talked about being the youngest team in the game, and you're probably right. I don't have the ages in front of me. We don't have the opening day rosters just yet, obviously. But you're definitely right about being a top three. Garrett Crochet was the opening day starter a year ago. Obviously, he's gone. You look at the resumes of some of these guys, including yourself, that are available for that slot. And, I mean, I'd make the case right now that Jonathan Cannon's the opening day starter for the Chicago White Sox. That's one of those, like, things when you're playing catch in the backyard with a sibling or a teammate or your dad or whatever, that you dream about. I mean, I'm not even sure that has even snuck into your head. But the idea that you had that type of seasons, 11 starts of 6 innings or more that could lead you to be the opening day starter on the youngest team in baseball, like, what would that mean to you? Because over a 12-month stretch, there has been a lot that's changed in your life.
Oh, without a doubt. And, I mean, anytime, it doesn't matter what organization you're a part of, what team you're on, to have the honor of starting on opening day is something that you'll never forget. And to even be talked about in that conversation is an honor for me. I mean, I know that obviously we got a long way to go. We got 2 weeks before we kind of head out to spring training, and when we're there for a while, and there's a lot of baseball to be played. But I'm obviously would be very honored to have that opportunity to start on opening day. But like I said, I'm really excited to get out to spring training and meet all the new guys and see everyone from last year. And so I'm really excited to get going.
We talked a little about this yesterday at Sox Fest. Tell our listeners a little bit about who had the most impact on you, without worrying about who you're insulting at this point, and what did that pitcher or pitchers convey to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think two of the older guys, and I really actually think it's three guys that were very impactful last year, and I think one was Chris Flexen, and Chris. Me and Chris got to play golf together quite a bit in Chicago, so we got to spend a lot of time together. And I think Chris was definitely one of those guys that kind of taught me what it means to be a professional, carry yourself as a professional. And I have a ton of respect for Chris and everything Flex has done in his career. He's kind of done it all. He's played overseas. He's played in the big leagues. And so to get that experience from him was super, super great for me. And then obviously you have a guy like Garrett who has been up for a while, been hurt, and so for him to have the season that he had last year, I still think it's underappreciated what he did last year, to not be a starter for years, to walk out there, be the opening day starter when no one really even knew if he was going to be a starter going into spring training, to earn the opening day spot, and then to do what he did throughout the whole year, stay healthy the whole season, was so impressive. And so to learn from him was cool. And then the other one was Martin Maldonado. And to have an older catcher that's been around the block and the experience and all of that is kind of leading the pitchers. That was huge for me. I mean, he was definitely able to kind of calm me down and get me refocused, especially in those early starts.
White Sox pitcher Jonathan Cannon joining us for one more minute here on Inside the Clubhouse. You had the opportunity to see the fans react last night to a couple of the guys who were responsible for winning the 2005 World Series. And Mark Burley, obviously here in town, a legend in this town. The statue information comes out that they're going to unveil a statue of him on July 11th. What does that do for a young guy like you to understand like the history of the team, to see it right in front of your eyes, to see how fans react? Did you get a chance to meet Mark and share a few words with him and just kind of taking that moment in rather than looking up at the banners, just saying, oh, that's cool. You actually were able to kind of see what it's like last night.
Yeah, I mean, I got a chance to meet Mark last night, and it was a little bit surreal for me because I grew up watching Mark. I remember when he threw the perfect game. I remember all of that. And to see the fans still react the way they do every time he comes around, I think just speaks to the White Sox fan base and how passionate they are and everything. And all of those guys are just unbelievable players. And to be a part of that World Series is obviously something that will always be special and always be remembered in this city and should never be forgotten. So it's going to be cool to see that that statue get unveiled in early July.
You were like 8 years old or 7 years old when Burley threw the perfect game. Is that right?
I'm trying to remember what
actually
year was it.
Here, look,
it was 2009.
July 19th.
2009.
Yeah. So he threw it on July 20th. So 4 days after your ninth birthday is when he threw the perfect game.
Yep.
I mean,
I remember the catch to save it. That was, oh man, that was such a good game. And so to then meet him was really cool for me.
You're getting Ryan very excited back to that.
As I said earlier,
he's going back in the Wayback Machine.
A memorable moment for everyone. Bruce and I were both there covering that game. But Mark Burley did put his arm around Bruce for a couple of minutes last night. So just to size up who's who over here.
Well, luckily, Jonathan's not at that level yet of wanting to give me a hug. But maybe in the next 10 years, you know, we'll get to that. Thanks so much for taking some time out. And enjoy the rest of Sox Fest. You are a real pleasure to deal with as a human being and as an athlete, and we're thankful you took some time out.
We appreciate
you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. I always enjoy coming on and talking to y'all.
Jonathan Cannon of the Chicago White Sox. White Sox pitcher. Hey, who knows? As we mentioned, maybe he's the opening day starter for the 2025 White Sox. We got to go to a final break here. Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey wrapping things up on the other side on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. Back on Inside the Clubhouse. You got 8 minutes. Hopefully all you people are headed out to Orland Park right now because Lawrence Holmes and Bruce's buddy Remy Martin are out there in Orland Park at Binney's. Register for your chance to play hoops on the Court of Dreams at the United Center with us on February 22nd. Remy Martin, team up for excellence. Again, that's Orland Park Binney's.
He does nights on The Score, right?
Yeah, that's usually when he shines most is at night. Yeah, but there's no – the way I see it, it's always 5 o'clock somewhere.
I agree. In closing our show out today, Cub fans, do you think they're feeling a little anxious, a little teased about – is Presley coming? Is Bregman coming? Is Stanek coming? Is Robertson coming? You know, what is the next week to 10 days look like before they hit spring training on February the 9th?
I'd say it's a frustrated tease. How about that?
Okay.
Where the tease is not, like, the juice that's come out of the squeeze so far isn't tasting all that good. Now, that could change in the matter of 7 days. It could change in 7 hours.
Yeah.
But does Ryan Presley get everybody going, all right, here we go?
Well, I mean, do the Cubs become Houston
2.0?
East?
Yeah, I mean, kind of.
I mean, they're good players. They have been in the playoffs and deep in the playoffs for 7 or 8 years in a row.
Kyle Tucker. Yeah, we said it last week. Kyle Tucker's played in 3 flipping World Series.
See, the one thing that he supplies, which is great for Cub fans, they have a star.
Yeah.
This is a legitimate star.
I'd like to see other guys around him.
Right. Exactly. And so would they. But money is always an issue. Fans don't want to hear it. But You know, they have to be creative, and I think Hoyer's being as creative as he can be with the money that he has.
Cade Horton, Jonathan Cannon were our guests today here on Inside the Clubhouse. Alex Kuhn making us look good behind three sheets of glass now in the new, as the board gets changed out and swapped out. Alex is like halfway down the hallway on a monitor, and he's still kicking it. Always love being with you, Bruce. Inside the Clubhouse. Another edition rolls on next week.
Absolutely. People can read me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670score.com. Just 2 weeks till opening day. I mean, spring training
pitchers
opening
and
day.
Catchers. It's getting warmer. I'm at Ryan McGuffey. You can follow me at the White Sox Recap Podcast. Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey, Inside the Clubhouse wraps up this edition. We'll see you guys next week here on 670 The Score. Steve Rosenblum for Saturday Suckage is back at 11 o'clock.